what I found is that what she wants to talk about is how sad she is that her family, that she's letting her family down.
Right.
She's here in the hospital, and the way she's always found her identity and meaning is that she's been there for her husband,
and
been there for
be.
Her kids, and now she can't be. And that's her meaning.
This is Norm Chapter 4, the conclusion of our conversation, where thoughts turn towards death.
And her hope, her only hope, that she, the only way she can identify hope or define it is going to be about getting back to usefulness. Therefore, she's in despair because she's learned that she's never going to be useful in her mind.
Sure.
And so what I'm working on with her is, what I offer to her is my gratitude. I thank her for what I've learned from her when she talks.
Oh, beautiful.
And try to give her an experience of usefulness
Man.
When we meet. Because my assessment is that that's how she finds her value.
This episode of Faith Biscuits is a conversation with the head of spiritual care for a major hospital in Boise. Today's episode focusing on some great stories around the end.
So I want to tell you, I had this patient, this old guy who had cancer, came out of hospice. And his wife was a good friend of mine, old lady, and through church.
Thank
you.
Have a good day.
Thank you. And one day, I came to visit him and her, and Al had decided really wisely to have his pacemaker shut off. He's dying from cancer. He's dying from cancer, and you don't have to have surgery. They do it electronically, like a magnet. They wave it over it, do something, and turns it off. Because he got thinking, I'm dying from cancer already. If my heart stops, that's fine with me. What I don't want to experience is being shocked back, like
oh
mom
my,
was.
Terrible.
I don't want this thing to start going off. It's a big deal. Like dad, you know what mom experienced? Awful.
Wow.
So he wanted it turned off. So I didn't know about that. I arrived for a visit, and Rachel says,
hey,
oh, Al's back here in the room. We have this guy from the heart cardiology blah 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 company here. And so I come and I'm standing in the hallway because the room is crowded. Al's in the bed, emaciated. Humorous guy, emaciated,
that helps.
Dying of cancer. At the foot of the bed is a young man in overalls, kind of a suit.
No.
You can tell he's a technician.
And you said overalls. There's no way. What overalls? With the Ralphs?
With a wrench and a screwdriver and a drill. Okay, I might be overstating that.
Okay. So he's the technician.
Dressed, maybe he had a white shirt and tie. He was I could tell that he was formally.
I'm good at pacemakers.
And he had a little. And he had his little kit sitting on the base of the bed.
God.
That presumably had the equipment that he needed. And so he's.
Was he wearing a hood?
Yeah.
And a sickle? Did he have a sickle in his hand?
Well, that's my role, as this story will point out. So he's standing at the foot of the bed. And then Rachel, who's just led me in from the front door, standing in the doorway of the bedroom and stopping respectfully because Al and this young man are talking. And then I'm in the hallway behind Rachel. So we just stop, but that's the visual. That's
there
the
we
image.
Go.
I can see everybody. And Al says to, and Rachel has explained to me that the guy's here to turn off the pacemaker.
Okay.
Oh, great, that's a great idea.
She
didn't have to explain it at all. Well, he just doesn't want to experience it. He did die soon after, but it was not so much like a very end. It was just, so.
This pacemaker's not going to revive me.
Yeah, it's not going to revive me. Bring me back for what?
Yeah.
To die on hospice of cancer. So I already did that. So he's, Al says to the young man, they're just in time for them to kind of wrap up their conversation. And he says to the young man, this is the right thing to do, right?
Oh, God, what a horrible thing to say.
And the man, this young guy, just plainly blanches and says,
that is not my department.
I just came here because they said that you wanted this. I can't.
Oh,
and he looks helplessly at Rachel. He looks helplessly at Rachel.
Help me.
And Rachel turns to me.
Turns to you.
And she says, this is the right thing to do, right?
Oh, my God.
And I say to Rachel, yes.
Oh.
And Rachel says to Al, yes. And
oh,
Al turns to the man and says, turn it off.
Oh,
and it took no more time than that. It just took someone to say, yes, it is the right thing. You're thinking right.
You're thinking right.
I understand the ambivalence.
Yes. You're
of course.
Scared as hell and it seems weird. And did
and
the
I
right
felt
thing.
Not only because I'm a chaplain, because I'm I'm the most removed,
right.
And it's like this is not ambiguous to me at all that it's the right thing. So I can help.
Sure.
I can help here. I'm not caught up in it emotionally. This is my story. I'll use this in the sermon about passing responsibility. No one wants
to. No one wants the final word.
No one wants the word. No one wants to carry that voice.
An ordained Presbyterian pastor, Norm still preaches a few times a year around the Boise area. He's working on an upcoming sermon where he wants to address this reluctance but need for speaking clearly about end-of-life issues.
The lectionary text, the Psalm is 139. Oh, oh Lord, you search me and know me. Every verse in
this
Psalm.
You know, when I stand up and when
I
rise.
When I come to the end of them, you are still here.
Yeah.
Your thoughts are so much more. So that's the theological framework.
Beautiful.
God is everywhere. There's no way away. Because we're talking about what do you need theologically to trust that you can have this conversation and that you have the right to say, turn it off.
Right.
I don't want any more treatment.
Right.
You can do that. It's not a betrayal of your family or of God. People say, I don't want to be God. But say, you were God when you...
intubated.
When you were intubated, your mother.
Yeah.
We all acted like God.
Yeah.
When your mother had heart surgery to do that bypass graft because of her clots and stuff,
yeah.
A generation ago, that was not possible.
Yeah.
She would have died. What we would have called that a natural death. It was her time. But now we prolonged her. We say, you gave me more life. Thank you, God. We acted like God when we did that. So we're going to talk about the theology of that. The Old Testament text is the call of Samuel. Sleeping in a...
Waking up, coming to the other room.
Samuel.
Go back and lay down.
And he goes back to Eli and he says, it wasn't me. Go back and lay down. What's wrong with you?
Samuel.
Three times, three times. Finally, Eli realizes it's God talking to him. And what we now know in the whole story is that this is the story of Samuel getting his prophetic voice. And that's going to be my link. I'm going to say, with regard to your life, your family, your plan of care for the way you end your life, how you want this to go, there's only one voice, and it's God in you. It's your prophetic voice.
What a scary thing.
Isn't it scary? Look how scary he was, this young man. Especially when he heard what the message was, he didn't want it.
Yeah, yeah.
Eli said, you tell me.
Or
this
right.
may it be done to you. May this and more be done to you if you don't tell me.
If you don't tell me exactly
what God said you have to say.
Oh, God.
And then the message was a damning message to Eli. So not only did Samuel have to learn to own that he had a prophetic voice, he didn't like what he heard.
Yeah,
it was going to be hard to say it. And Eli forced it out of him. You say it. Tell us.
Eli knew where it had come from.
And that's where we want, from chaplains, we want to get, can I have a minute with the patient?
Exactly.
And we back way up and we come back and we say, your family needs you to tell them or to give them permission to stop doing this if you don't want it. I'm afraid to take, I know you're afraid to disappoint them. But this is about you, and you have to own it. I've had that conversation with people. They are burdened by the not knowing. Everyone trying to figure out, taking turns about what should be done for you, what the right thing is, because you're not willing to speak up. Or now let's back up and say, you're not in the bed yet. You're just who you are right now. Look around at who's going to be taking care of you, making decisions. Tell them what you would want as much as possible. Or give them permission to decide for you.
Can we find the courage to take up that prophetic urgency to speak God's truth about what we want for our own end of life?
Our family did a really good job around death.
I think so. We tried. Everyone needs to let go of getting this perfect.
Oh my God.
Just try.
Right. Do anything.
Try with small conversations. Just start in somewhere.
Yeah.
And just start having it. push against it a little bit. No one wants to, you know, you might be surprised by how it goes.
Right.
Yeah.
Our conversation rather naturally turns back around to our own closest experiences of death. In this case, the death of our mom a few years earlier.
She told Dad when she came from the hospital that time at Christmas, she said, "Art, don't take me back there." As in, no matter what happens, don't take me back there. It was in the conversation of, what a shitty way to spend Christmas.
Caught
but it
between
was, don't
life
take
and
me
death.
Back there.
Caught
and when you ask Dad, "Oh, you're so afraid of Mom dying."
We're good, thanks.
Good, thanks.
We could probably take the
check. Ready for check, all in one or separate?
Just one.
One? Do you want some more water?
No, thanks. Dad, it must have been hard having Mom that close and on dialysis. When was she going to die? That wasn't Dad's fear. Dad's fear was that one morning they would wake up and Mom would say, "I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore."
Yeah.
His biggest fear in life was, "I don't want to go and do dialysis." So he was incredibly sad and relieved that they never had to have that conversation where she checked out, that she was taken without having to do the difficult stuff.
When we had our five wishes conversation as a family.
Uh-huh, sure, with Mom and Dad.
I told Mom.
10 years ago?
Then.
6 years ago, I don't know.
That I would, she died 6 years ago.
That's right.
In
2011. Yeah.
I told Mom that I would really appreciate it if you would ask or arrange to be kept alive long enough for me to get here.
Huh?
I'd like to get here and be able to say goodbye. It was really hard to say that. Remember that conversation
yeah,
was so,
sure.
We were so out there.
Mom and Dad more comfortable than we thought they would
yes,
be with that.
Yes,
glad to
yes.
have it.
And so I asked for that.
Yeah.
A few months later, when Mom had been in the hospital and then we got her home.
Uh-huh.
Maybe it was a year later. She'd had a harrowing time in the hospital
yes.
with her infection and all that bullshit.
Yes. Christmas time.
Christmas time, all that trouble. When I hugged her and kissed her goodbye, I was holding her and I said in her ear, "I remember I said this to you, and I want to say to you now that the fact that I am living several hours away is not your problem, it's mine."
Oh, what a different thing to say.
When you want to go and need to go,
you have permission
you
to
can go.
Go.
Oh, you don't have to hang around for me.
And Mom
and we cried.
Oh.
She said, she kissed me and she said, "We'll be fine, honey."
And we were.
When we were. And we were.
We come to the end of a long conversation. Julie and I are on a road trip and heading on through Boise back to Colorado. I mentioned to Norm that we have taken great pictures, Julie has anyway, because we have a new lens for her camera, and that this has somehow made me look at things differently with a more careful eye. The patient waitress comes by with a check and of course first has to ask if we want to become rewards members, join the Brew Pubs Club or some darn thing like that.
Just go here. Come up with a username and a password. And you can go on and we'll keep you apprised of our latest deals and beer.
I'm exhausted about music and beer and food and vacations and anything. Can we just get the 6-digit satanic numbers across our forehead?
Let's just get it over
with. Get it off right away and do it.
I don't need individuality. I need to stop being asked, God, now who you are. Don't ask me who I am anymore in any more ways. Not only an eye scanner, just take my eye. I have two.
And this conversation is all I want.
I know. So. I know.
Oh, I think that's great, Mom. Man, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's fun to talk with the light on and to think about
flashing lights.
But it's the sense that it heightened the sense of the con. You know what this is like? You know what this is just like?
What?
This is just like taking a camera on a trip.
You look more carefully when you have a camera for beauty. It's the listening, doesn't it?
And the speaking.
Yeah.
It makes you talk a little bit differently when you realize that this is a worthwhile conversation. It's a crucial conversation, you know? It's
Thanks so much for taking the time to listen to Faith Biscuits. I'm Don Trump.